Recovery Elevator, episode 473.
The voice in my head was telling me it was everyone else, and if everyone would just leave me alone, then I would be able to get a handle on my life. It wasn't, I didn't see that I had any sort of problem with alcohol. I was using it because people was trying to tell me what to do.
Welcome to the Recovery Elevator Podcast. My name is Paul Churchill, and I'm excited to be here with you today. On today's episode, listeners, we have Lee. He's 43 years old from the United Kingdom and took his last drink on August 17th, 2020. Great job, Lee. Listeners, as the Black Eyed Peas would say, I got a feeling today is going to be a good day. In fact, today has already been a good day. Okay, I've got an ask for you, which I do every 20 episodes or so. If you have found the Recovery Elevator Podcast helpful to you, please take a hot minute and leave a review either in iTunes or Spotify. This helps you shred the shame and helps our show reach more listeners. Thank you so much. Now, I had somebody ask me the other day, what's the difference between Recovery Elevator and Cafe RE? So I thought I'd answer this one on the air. Okay, Recovery Elevator is the podcast you are listening to right now. I cover a topic regarding alcohol for 5 to 8 minutes, followed by someone sharing their story of how they quit drinking, and they are all rock stars without a doubt. Sometimes you'll hear me refer to Recovery Elevator in its shortened form, RE. In fact, I'm wearing my favorite hat right now, which has the letters RE on the front. Recovery Elevator Podcast Fun Fact, Episode 1, dropped on February 25th, 2015, and we've been putting an episode out every Monday for the past 473 Mondays. I'm so proud of the team. Okay, now Cafe RE, which is short for Cafe Recovery Elevator, is our alcohol-free community. Currently, we are 1,400 strong who have one goal in mind, which is to leave the booze behind. We embrace all pathways to wholeness, and I'd say 95% of our members have exhausted all moderation techniques and are ready to say goodbye for good, as many of our members have already done so. In Cafe RE, we have 20 to 30 chats per week on Zoom covering all kinds of topics. The chats are my favorite part of Recovery Elevator. In fact, shout out to Dale, Liz, Steph, and all of our Cafe RE chat hosts. You guys do such an incredible job. Now, the Recovery Elevator podcast is free, but Cafe RE has a monthly fee of $24 per month, but we always grant scholarship requests, so just let us know what you can pay. Perhaps my favorite analogy in this space is a Lakota Sioux Indian chief once said, "We can turn to nature for guidance to all of our problems." Now, when buffalo are staring down a massive blizzard, they come together as a group and walk directly into the storm till they make it through to the other side. We come together and we are stronger. We are connecting over the pain points of alcohol and collectively creating the momentum needed to find wholeness without alcohol. No easy feat in a drunk world, but we do it every day. If Cafe RE does interest you, there's a link in the show notes to join and use the promo code OPPORTUNITY to waive the setup fee. If you sign up and it doesn't jive for you, let us know. We'll refund you, no questions asked. But I feel if you are ready to ditch the booze, this amazing community has your back. Okay, let's get started. There are a million reasons why people drink. One reason I'm going to focus on for the duration of this intro is relief. Now, thank you, alcohol, for providing myself relief when I needed it most. Then, there came a time, and it wasn't overnight, when the source of relief became less effective. Alcohol then provided no relief at all. Then it became the source of discomfort itself. Now, the most excruciating part of a drinking problem is when we reach for alcohol to seek harmony, but it only brings pain. Now, the conscious mind knows the outcome. It knows it won't work. But in the unconscious, it is still inscribed like a commandment on a clay tablet that alcohol will deliver the goods. That will pull up a chair next to Snoop Dogg on the beach, throwing down Coronas without a worry. But that is not reality. That's not true. What is true is that alcohol is the Chuck Norris roundhouse straight to your prefrontal cortex. And FYI listeners, you need a healthy prefrontal cortex to have a happy and normal life, as it's your prefrontal cortex which regulates your thoughts, actions, and emotions. So listeners, the seed I want to plant with you today, that even though we live in a world full of messaging and imagery saying that alcohol will enhance your life, in reality, The truth is an alcohol-free life is the easier, softer way to live. A life without alcohol is the path of least resistance. Now, I've seen this stat a couple times that we see alcohol poised in a positive light daily about 40 to 60 times per day. Crazy. But this would be through TV advertisements, magazines, social media, the fun happy hour graphic at your local restaurant. You get the point. So I am going to repeat the following line 40 to 60, let's go 65 times just to be safe. An alcohol-free life is the easier, softer way. 64 more times to go. An alcohol-free life is the easier, softer way. Kidding. We're not going 63 more times with that. But I will say it one more time in a voice with as much consciousness that I can attach to it. An alcohol-free life is the easier, softer way. In 2019, I wrote a book summarizing what alcohol is. The book title is Alcohol is Shit. This book has sold almost 100,000 copies, so other people reaching the same conclusion. Now I can prove to you an alcohol-free life is an easier, softer way 1,000 times today and another 1,000 times tomorrow. I can do it in my sleep, and so can you. But let's look at just one aspect, money. In this drunk world, for some silly reason, money is king. So let's go in that direction. According to my Recovery Elevator Sobriety Tracker app, which you can get on the iPhone App Store and or the Google Play Store for free, I have saved $82,875.99 since I quit drinking in 2014. I type this intro from my house in Costa Rica because I quit drinking alcohol. An alcohol-free life is the easier, softer way. Now, ditching the booze overall will simplify your life, is the easier, softer way, and is 100% the path of least resistance. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's intro. Thank you so much for being part of my alcohol-free journey and allowing me to be part of your journey into wholeness. My gosh, what an honor it is. Now, before we hear from Lee, let's hear from SoberLink.
Recovery Elevator listeners, let's talk resolutions. Statistically, only about 10% of people achieve their New Year's goals, while a staggering 80% admit defeat. Why? They lack accountability. After all, how would we really know if you cheated? If you were using SoberLink to maintain sobriety, your support network would know. SoberLink is the only high-tech breathalyzer system that will truly hold you accountable when cravings get a little too loud. Here's why it has our stamp of approval. You'll test at the same time every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so it knows it's you that's testing. Tamper sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping to rebuild trust and prevent relapse. Start this year the way you intend to finish it, sober. Visit www.soberlink.com/recovery-elevator to sign up and receive $50 off of a device.
Lee, how are you?
Yeah, fine, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, all right, Lee. It's great to be here with you. Now, listeners, I don't know how we connected, but I wanted to get Lee on the podcast for one major reason here. He has heard all 472 episodes of the Recovery Elevator podcast. This is episode 473. So Lee, I want to say thanks for listening, my man. How has the Recovery Elevator podcast, or how have the interviewees impacted your life without alcohol?
Well, it was about 18 months. I was sober, and I don't know how I come across the Recovery Elevator podcast, but it was something I was looking for, because I got into recovery by coming to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I was that desperate to get sober. You know, I was looking for different avenues of, you know, just really curious about different things. And, you know, podcasts came up, and yeah, I just stumbled across the Recovery Elevator podcast, and yeah, I just got hooked straight away. And with the work that I do, it was available to me constantly all day, and yeah, I just binged listening to them.
Well, Lee, I want to say thank you to for being a Journey listener, and thank you to all our Journey listeners out there. I know there's a bunch of you who have heard every single episode. It's flattering. It warms my heart. It's great to be on this journey with you, Lee, and all of you listeners right now. So let's get right into this, Lee. When was your last drink?
My last drink was the 17th of August, 2020.
Yeah, buddy. Nice job, my man. And give listeners a little background about yourself, Lee, where you're from, maybe what you do for a living. Do you have a family? Most importantly, what do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, so I'm from a place in the UK called Birmingham. I work at a paint manufacturer's. We sell, you know, across the world. And, you know, I have a wife, two children, two little girls. And what I like to do for fun, well, nowadays I like to go to the gym a lot, you know, mainly exercise, stuff like that. Yeah.
All right. Well, Lee, let's get into it. Let's do what we came here to do. I'm going to let you begin where you want to start in regards to your story with alcohol, perhaps into a drinking problem. And of course, let's save some time for almost a 3.5 years away from alcohol. Can't wait to hear it. Lee, I'm going to let you get started.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. So my first experience with alcohol, I was about 8 years old. And I tried, you know, some of my dad's drink. And I can remember tasting that drink and thinking that is, you know, a really horrible, you know, taste. And, you know, I think I remember saying to my mom at the time, there's no way I'm ever touching that when I'm older. And, you know, I left it there, to be honest. I didn't get any sort of buzz from it. You know, it didn't do anything for me. I wasn't curious. I just thought it was horrible, left it. Fast forward a few years to about the age of 14. I went out to a party and, yeah, there was alcohol there. And that time, you know, I drank enough to get buzzed from it. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I don't remember much about the evening, but I know the next day I felt really, really rough. So, you know, I swore off it again and thought, you know, I'm never doing this again. I don't want to feel like this. It's horrible. And I did stay off it, you know. With being 14 and that, I didn't have much money to get alcohol anyway. But slowly but surely, as I got a little bit older, 15, 16, I started to earn my own money. And, yeah, I just started going out every weekend. And, yeah, by any means, whether we went to the shops to get it or I'd go to the bars, yeah, I was drinking regular from the age of 15, 16. And I didn't notice, you know, that I had a problem as such back then, because the people that I was doing it with was all doing the same thing. But now that I look back, you know, I know that I was blacking out a lot. You know, I'd always be the one who was getting carried back home, and I'd always be the one, you know, throwing up on myself and stuff. And yeah, it was just, you know, it was good times and it was fun times, really. I can say I look back on it and I did have some good times, but there was a problem even back then.
So Lee, how old are you right now when you're saying, you looking back, you think there was a problem? 17, 18?
Yeah, about 17, 18. At the time, I didn't think there was a problem at all. It's only since I've been in recovery that I've looked back and thought, yeah. I mean, I'm a firm believer that I think I was born with this illness before I even took a drink, to be honest. So, yeah, you know, I think before, if I go back a little bit, before I even took a drink, you know, I never felt comfortable in my own skin. I always felt insecure, anxious, socially awkward. And when I found alcohol, that all just disappeared straight away.
Lee, there's a commonality I've heard in this space, going to meetings, doing the interviews, is what you just said. I want to expand on that a bit. Is you always felt perhaps uncomfortable in your own skin. I think you used the word insecure. That was me as well growing up until I had that first drink. I know you drink at age 8, wasn't quite for you. 14, I think you said you felt rotten the next day, however you phrased that. But, you know, did alcohol solve that for you? Like feeling uncomfortable for your skin, was it the answer?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it did. It turned me from this shy, insecure person to the complete opposite. I was outgoing. I felt like I was, you know, the funny one. You know, I just felt confident. And, you know, even back when I was 17, 18. That's what, you know, that's why I drank to feel good about myself. Because when I wasn't drinking, I didn't feel that good about myself. But as I say, you know, I kept on drinking. It was pretty much a weekend sort of thing. You know, there was no consequences as such. I'd go out on a weekend. I might upset someone in a bar or something, but you know, it didn't happen too often. And when it did, it was just laughed about, and that was it pretty much. And yeah, I had about 8 to 10 years of that, and it was just normality really for me. You know, I'd go to work, earn my money, and come back and drink, you know, on the weekends and stuff. And then, you know, I met my partner, my wife, and had a couple of children. And, you know, I remember people saying to me, oh, it'll change, you'll settle down. And to me, it didn't do that. My drinking, it took off down a different avenue, because I had these little young children that I had to take care of for the first time. I had to take care of someone else. So my drinking, it got worse.
Okay. Despite what you're hearing from your friends, like, hey, you're going to phase out of this chapter in your life, you found the opposite. The drinking progressed, shall we say. Gotcha.
Definitely.
So how was it being an early father? You've got alcohol in your life. It's progressing. Was there a voice that's saying, all right, Lee, like, this has got to go. This is getting worse.
Well, I mean, I can put it into perspective. I remember my wife being in hospital, giving birth to I think it was my second daughter. And all I could think about was, if she has to stay in overnight, I can't wait to get back home so I've got the house to myself and I can drink through the night. And, you know, that's all I could think about. You know, very selfish of me, but, you know, that's how sick I was at the time. You know, that's how I felt. And yeah, it just progressed from there. It got worse and worse as the years went by. You know, I did some terrible things through my drinking, you know, unforgivable really. But I'm just glad it came to a head when it did.
When you say it came to a head, is this like your rock bottom moment? Do you mind if we cover that, Lee? Like, what was...
Yeah, well, I mean, I should have had a rock bottom moment. About 18 months before I did finally have a rock bottom, my final rock bottom. So I crashed my car when I was heavily intoxicated. It was a single car accident, so I crashed into a tree, and the car was completely, you know, a write-off. And you'd think that would have given me a wake-up call. I broke my arm, and, you know, a few hours later, I was getting told that I had to go to hospital by my wife and some family members. And I disappeared and went to the shop to get more alcohol. And I always think about it, because I think the thing that put me there in the first place was the very thing that I wanted and I thought would solve the problem. And it was the thing that put me in that position in the first place.
Lee, so I'm here at 18 months, I think, before this alcohol-free run. You say you heavily intoxicated, drive into a tree. You find out you got to go to the hospital, and right after that, you get more alcohol. I just want to, no judgment, Lee. I've been in my own similar situation. I know a lot of listeners are going, yep, yep, yep. Mm-hmm. That was a moment where I should have quit. But we almost doubled down on the drinking and said you went back to alcohol. You know, was there a voice inside that said, yo, Lee, something's got to give here? Or what were you thinking?
Absolutely not. The voice in my head was telling me it was everyone else, and if everyone would just leave me alone, then I would be able to get a handle on my life. I didn't see that I had any sort of problem with alcohol. I was using it because people was trying to tell me what to do. You know, I should be doing this and I should be doing that. And, you know, I didn't blame it on alcohol. I blamed it on everyone else around me. And that's the way I've seen it.
What happens after the wreck?
Yeah, so I went and got my arm fixed. And yeah, ended up getting another car and just carried on doing the same thing. You know, I promised to myself at first that I wouldn't drink drive again. That lasted for about 2 weeks and it all started again. After that, there was a period of me, because of that happening, you know, it put even more of a strain on mine and my wife's relationship, and she didn't really want me drinking in the house anymore after that. So therefore, it caused arguments, and I'd end up leaving every other weekend, should I say, because I'd want to drink and I'd disappear. I'd go to friends' houses and I would just, yeah, disappear. Then I'd come back a couple of days later with my tail between my legs, saying that I wouldn't, I'm not going to do this anymore. Please forgive me. And the funny thing is, when I'm saying this, I'd have my alcohol stored in my car, you know, waiting, thinking of a way to get it into the house when I'm promising my wife that it's not going to happen again. And yeah, that went on for the last probably 6 months of my drinking. I'd say this is coming towards the end of my drinking now. But yeah, it was getting bad.
Now,
really
Lee,
bad.
Before we hit the record button, I think you said you tried to moderate before at the end there. Can you describe what that looked like? Maybe some specific moderation techniques? And of course, did that work?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call them techniques, but yeah, I tried limiting my drinks to just the weekends, and then it was limiting them to just one day a week. And that's, I did get it down to one day a week. And I did that for about 3 to 4 weeks. And in that time, I was absolutely horrendous.
Like to be around, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds painful to me. If that was at the end of my drinking one day a week, look out.
Yeah, it was tough. It was real tough. And after that 4 week period, I gave up basically. And I said, I can't do this. You know, I gave in and said, you know, I'm just going to have to keep drinking. This is just me, you know. And I was pretty much ready to leave the family home and go and live on my own just to drink, because I couldn't see any other way of solving the problem.
So, Lee, I want to comment on what you just said here. And so everybody's story is different, but there's a hell of a lot of similarities. And it's almost like we relinquish ourselves to what we are. It's like, well, shit, you know, I drink. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. I remember before my sobriety run, you know, I was getting into AA around the word alcoholic. And I was like, well, shit, I'm an alcoholic. It's what I do. It's what I drink. And I've heard a lot of people say, you know, like, hey, well, this is what it is. It's almost like you start building a framework around a life where alcohol is at the forefront. Well, all right, I'm going to leave the home. This is how it's going to be with alcohol in your life. And what happens after that?
Yeah, so it came to a head. So I left the family home once again, and I was doing my usual driving around in the car, feeling sorry for myself. And when I got back to the house a couple of days later, there was big periods of that time which I could not remember. You know, a lot of blacking out whilst I've been driving and so forth. And when I got back to the house, I was full of anxiety, because I used to suffer with anxiety and I used to think that alcohol would help that. But this time it was just overwhelming. I had a panic attack, and because I couldn't remember what I'd done, and I'd been driving, and obviously because I'd crashed the car before, I'd just had enough. And you know, I fell to my knees, and you know, I wanted help at that point.
And Lee, this is in August of 2020.
Yeah, it's the very beginning.
Okay. And yeah, your sobriety date is August 17th, but it sounds like the panic attack, you're coming out of a blackout. You don't know what's going on. It's extreme unrest. You've dropped to your knees. Surrender, my people.
Yeah.
And you said you can't take it anymore. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. So, I went to bed that night and I woke up and I was still full of this anxiety. You know, it hadn't gone away, and I said I needed help, and I found the number for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I gave them a call, and they didn't initially speak to me. They said they'd call me back. So they called me back a bit later that day, and they said they would get someone to call me the following day to have a proper talk with me. So immediately after I spoke to them, I felt better, because I'd actually spoke to someone, and I had admitted that, you know, I had a problem.
Hang on real quick, Lee. Back it up a second. When you said you realized you needed help, you said, I needed help. Did you say that to yourself or did you say it to your spouse? And then also, how did you feel when you said, I need help?
Well, first, I said it to myself at first. I said, I admitted that I had a problem for the first time. But yeah, I admitted it to my wife as well. I wasn't going to say I was an alcoholic at that point, but I was coming around to the idea that I had a problem with alcohol. So the next day, someone from Alcoholics Anonymous called me. I was on the phone for about 30 minutes, and they initially said they'd been sober for, I think at the time it was 17 years. And I was completely blown away by this. I was completely blown away by it. I couldn't go, 17 hours without a drink. And I was hearing this person say they'd been 17 years. And from that point, I put the phone down and I thought, wow, there is a solution. I wasn't too sure at that point what it was, but there was something.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, yeah. There was hope, which I'd not had at all.
Sure. Now, did you end up going to a meeting?
Well, at this point, obviously because of the pandemic, there wasn't face-to-face meetings going on at the time. So I ended up coming on to Zoom. There was a lot of Zoom meetings. And for the first year, I did Zoom meetings. But I'll go back a little bit because the first week of these meetings, I was still drinking. I was drinking on the meetings, at the meetings. And I didn't speak. I didn't have the camera on. And I just listened. And for the whole time, I was drinking through that first week. And I was scared to put it down. It was making me anxious, thinking about putting the thing down that was making me anxious, which is, it's weird when you think about it. But yeah, and then after a week of Zoom meetings, I've seen what these people, even though it was behind a screen, I've seen what these people had. They were smiling, they was laughing, they was joking. They seemed happy. And it's something I'd not felt in a long time, genuine happiness. And I decided to give it a go, even though it scared me to death.
So when you were on those meetings, you're while drinking, and I love how you phrased it, because there is an insanity component of all addictions, and especially with alcohol, like you're scared to put down the thing that was causing you to be scared, or the causing getting anxious about putting down the thing that's causing the anxiety. Again, no judgment. I get it. I've been there.
Yeah.
But with that week when you were drinking, was it like just a soft entry point? Like, all right, I'm drinking. I see the end of this is coming. Like, how did you feel at the very end there, right before you jumped off?
Yeah. So when I finally admitted I'd had enough, the day I got down on my knees and, I knew it was over. I knew it was over. I'd had enough. I genuinely had enough. And when I came into the rooms and I was on Zoom, I can honestly say I was drinking, but I wasn't enjoying it. Not that I was enjoying it anyway for the last few years of my drinking, but it wasn't doing anything. I was drinking for the sake of it. And I was listening. The more I listened, the less I was drinking. And eventually I just stopped altogether.
Wow. And there were some milestones before, like ready to be done, had enough, hit the knees.
Yep. Yeah.
And you said the more you listened, the less you drank.
Yeah.
Love that. So you'll walk us through that first week alcohol free, first month. And like, how did the body respond?
Well, even though I knew I'd had enough, that first, I'd say the first 2 to 3 months was absolutely horrific. I could not concentrate. My mind was all over the place. I remember the first weekend of being alcohol free. I was teaching my daughter how to ride a bike for the first time. And I just remember standing in the middle of the road, and I thought, this is shit. I thought, if I have quit alcohol for this, I don't want to be here. And that is genuinely how I felt. But I kept going to meetings and I kept sticking with it. And people was telling me, it will get better. It will get better.
Like, what was the carrot on the stick, though? Yeah, they're telling you it's getting better. It's getting better. It's going to get better. There's got to be more than that, because that's visceral. Standing in the road a week after quitting drinking, teaching your daughter how to ride a bike, and you're like, this effing sucks. Like, what kept you going?
Well, the hurt and damage I'd caused other people was one of the things that kept me going, because I knew how close I was to losing everyone that was close to me. I'd pushed them away so much. And also, the fear that I was filled with from the not knowing what I'd done on my last big drinking session that kept me going, that kept me pushing forward, because even though I felt so terrible as I was getting sober, the pain was nothing compared to what I felt at the end of my last drinking session. So yeah, those things are what pushed me to keep going in the beginning.
That last phrase you said reminds me of another phrase, is the path of least resistance. The pain of moving forward in life with that alcohol was less than the pain of going back to the bottle. And listeners, I can tell you right now, if you ride this thing long enough, you're going to get to that. You're also going to get to the point where alcohol is ruined for you. It just doesn't work. Once that intention has been put into the universe, it starts swirling around the brain of the gig is up. Like, I know this is over. Alcohol is ruined. You can drink. It's just never going to be the same. And again, the pain of moving forward without alcohol is less than the pain of the bottle. So you're stacking days, you're stacking weeks and months. Like, what happens like month 4, 5, 6, and 7?
Well, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I started to get on what you probably know, as the pink cloud. Things started to go really good. One thing I did notice, I was getting much better sleep, and all the stuff that was going around in my head, it was starting to, you know, ease off. And I didn't even realize how much stuff I had going on in my head. You know, all the anxiety, should I say, it started to ease off, which was, you know, funny, because I used to blame that on being depressed and stuff. And I was taking antidepressants as well at the time. But yeah, so as the months went on, things did start to get easier. But I still had drinking thoughts, and it was strange, because I was still making up excuses, thinking, well, one day maybe I will be able to have a drink, you know, if this happened. Or I could tell that I was still not thinking straight, because I'd think crazy thoughts, like, should I say, you know, if anything happened to one of my parents or something, maybe I'd take a drink then, you know. So I could tell that, even when I look back now, I wasn't thinking straight even then, but I was sticking at it. And, you know, I'm really glad that I have, because things have dramatically changed in my life.
Lee, what percentage would you say with your anxiety has gone away just by removing alcohol? Like 80% of anxiety is gone, or like, what would you say?
I'd say if not 100%, 95, 96%, definitely.
Incredible, right? Like, I personally drank to make the anxiety go away. Little did I know that alcohol was causing almost all of it. And right now, I'd say 90% of my anxiety went away, and about, you know, 10% of it there is that's healthy. It's like a barometer of telling me where to go in life. It's uncomfortable at times, but nothing. Like, I got into a taxi cab in my early 20s thinking I was having a heart attack. It was anxiety. So I feel you there. Lee, earlier in the interview, you said, you know, you had done some things that were unforgivable, and we all have been there. Question, have you forgiven yourself?
Yes, I have. Obviously, doing the 12-step program, I've obviously looked at various things that I've done. I didn't forgive me. It took a long time for me to forgive myself. I'd say 18 months, 2 years. You know, it's been progressive. They say the illness of alcoholism is progressive, but I like to think that recovery is progressive as well. And yeah, I've definitely at a point now where I have forgiven myself for the things that I've done. It's not so easy to forget those things, but I've definitely forgiven myself.
Lee, have the thoughts diminished of, you know, if my parents pass away, I'll take a drink, you know, or life events like that?
Yes. Yeah. It's, I don't think about alcohol at all now in any way. I don't know how to put it. I've stopped trying to be sober now. I just am sober. I live a sober life. When I first came into sobriety, everything was about trying. It was about trying to be a better person, about trying to stay away from alcohol, trying to not have these thoughts, trying to do this, trying to look at the big book, trying to get to meetings. But now I live that life. I don't have to try as such.
Lee, before we hit record, you said in your workspace, you can listen to podcasts or whatnot. You've heard 472 people just like yourself come on here, talk about their experiences in alcohol addiction, talk about their experience out of it. How have those previous 472 people played a role in your sobriety?
Yeah, well, each one of them have the podcast has helped me so much. But one thing I can say that definitely resonated with me from the start, and I'm going to go all the way back to probably the, I think the first episode, was you yourself, Paul, when you I think it was the when you was putting the dots with the circle.
Yeah, comfort
and he
zone.
Says, you've got to get out of that comfort zone. And I always remember that, because something like this today, what I'm doing now, would have been something where I would have bottled this. I would have turned around and sent an email saying, I can't make this tonight. I'm ill, or I'm this or I'm that, you know. And you have to get yourself out of that comfort zone to progress in anything. And it was something that I could never do before. I was, again, my anxiety, it would have been through the roof tonight, and it's not.
Yeah. Can you think of maybe one value bomb from a listener that you've heard that really helped you out?
There's so many. I can't actually think of one off the top of my head.
Yeah, not a problem. Well, Lee, we have reached the rapid fire round. If you answer these questions within 10 to 15 seconds, that would be great. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Lee, what's the one thing you've learned about yourself since quitting drinking?
Not to take myself too seriously. And yeah, to live in the present day, you know, not think about what happened yesterday and not worry about tomorrow.
Yeah, what's your best sober moment?
Best sober moment? Well, I've got to say, getting my wife and my kids back, you know, and being present there for them all. I'm eternally grateful for that.
What's your favorite alcohol-free drink?
Coffee. It's got to be.
And what's the point of life, Lee?
To enjoy it, I'd say.
Yeah. And what are some of your favorite recovery resources at 3.5 years away without alcohol?
Well, definitely Alcoholics Anonymous and Recovery Elevator podcast. There's a couple of other podcasts out there that I listen to. The Big Book and having a faith in a higher power, definitely.
What does your higher power look like?
Well, it's sort of changed over time. I used to use the rooms of AA as a higher power, which did work for a long time. But I was born and raised Catholic, and I seem to have gone back to that. I know it's not for everyone, but it works for me.
Yeah, if it works for you, that's what's up. Last question, Lee, what parting piece of guidance can you give to listeners who are thinking about quitting drinking?
Well, I'd just say take it one day at a time. That was very important to me, and it still is. I don't think about tomorrow at all, you know. I just live one day at a time, and if you can't do it one day at a time, do it half a day at a time, do it an hour at a time. You'll get there eventually.
And before you depart, Lee, give listeners your own "You Might Need to Ditch the Booze If" line.
Yeah, you might need to ditch the booze if you pour all the milk away from the fridge and chuck all the bread out just so you can make up an excuse to go to the shop to get alcohol.
I thought you were going there with that. That's a good one. That's a good one for sure. Lee, thank you for listening to every single episode of the podcast. As I mentioned, I'm so honored that I have Journey listeners out there. When I started this thing on February 25th, 2015, I remember that date well. I had no idea that we'd be coming up on nearly a decade of doing this, sharing our stories of hope, sharing our stories of guidance, of inspiration with listeners. Lee, thank you so much for sharing your story and for listening. You're a big part of our email, man. I really appreciate it, and it's an honor to meet you.
Yeah, it's been great to be on here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Lee. Flight attendant Amber May was faced with an odd passenger request during an Alaskan Airlines flight from Atlanta to Seattle over the past summer. She said, "Could you please help me keep some eggs warm?" Now, a passenger who was an employee at the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle was carrying 6 Chilean flamingo eggs where the incubator stopped working before the flight even took off. Now, the passengers seated nearby and all the flight attendants rallied to keep the eggs warm. All 6 of them have hatched and are living a happy life. Listeners, the opposite of addiction is connection. Recovery Elevator, go big, because eventually we'll all go home. I love you guys.